I'm Rick Ganley. This is NHPR News at 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. In 2011, Massachusetts Governor Deval Patrick signed a law allowing three new resort-style casinos. And ever since, the Bay State's gambling debate has been more about where to build these facilities, what rules should apply, and who gets the license to run them. But in late June, the gambling issue took a dramatic turn when the state Supreme Court said a casino repeal referendum question could appear on the November ballot, asking voters whether they want to scrap the whole idea. Now there's a ferocious campaign leading up to this referendum being waged by both sides. It's a process being keenly watched in the Granite State, which has had its own equally long and ferocious debate over expanded gambling, and where the legislature came closer to approving casinos than ever before this past session. Today in The Exchange, we look over at our southern border, at the referendum battle there, and as Massachusetts reveals its hand on casinos, what the results might mean for New Hampshire. Let's hear from you, too. What's your take on this Bay State debate and its implications here? Give us a call. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook and Twitter. Our guest for the hour is Mark Arsenault. He's a Boston Globe reporter who's been covering this issue intently. And Mark, thank you very much for giving us your time. We appreciate it.
You're welcome. I'm very glad to be here.
Well, I got that word ferocious, Mark, from you. You used it to describe the debate that has sprung up since the court said, yes, go ahead, you can put this issue on the ballot. What's it like? What's ferocious about it?
Well, the combatants in this debate are incredibly passionate on both sides. So the outward campaign right now is in that midsummer pre-crazy period, sort of as both sides now are working on their campaigns and staffing up in anticipation of a sprint to Election Day once the rest of the state gets home from vacation and starts paying attention to politics right around Labor Day.
Right, that's typical. Right around Labor Day, people come back, and then they go, oh, my goodness. Is this, would you say, dominating elections 2014? Is this sort of the biggest game in town this year, Mark?
We expect it is going to be. I mean, we've got an open governor's seat. Deval Patrick is not running for re-election, and we've got primaries on both sides. And the casino question, those are the things that are dominating or going to dominate politics in Massachusetts for the rest of the year.
So let's go back to this 2011 law, Mark, allowing three casinos and a slot parlor. What was the economic and political push that got this through the legislature?
Now, this issue had been debated for 20 years or so, people thinking about casinos ever since Foxwoods and Mohegan Sun in the early and mid-90s opened and started taking a lot of customers from Massachusetts. A lot of Massachusetts people used to make that relatively easy drive down to the tribal casinos in southeastern Connecticut. But remember, this really picked up momentum in the recession, this bill. It was considered and sold to the public as a jobs bill, that casinos would employ thousands of people. And when in 2009, when the state was bleeding jobs, that had a lot of appeal. So the bill nearly became law in 2010. It did become law in 2011. And here we are, though, 3 years later, we don't have casinos open yet.
So it was sold during the recession as a job creator.
A job creator and also a way to enhance state revenue. If you go down to Foxwoods and Mohegan Sun, it's easy to walk around the parking lot and look at all the New Hampshire license plates, Massachusetts license plates and New Hampshire. If you go to Twin River in Rhode Island, which is a slot parlor that recently expanded table games in Lincoln, Rhode Island, they get half of their customers from Massachusetts. So every other car that in the parking lot down at Twin River has got a Massachusetts license plate. So the impetus from politicians was, why not keep that money home, tax it, and maybe create some jobs?
Sure. So, you know, Massachusetts people are gambling anyway in Rhode Island and Connecticut. Why not keep them at home and get the money?
They're going to Rhode Island and Connecticut to lose money. Let's give them someplace local to lose it.
A couple just terms, if you could, in this debate, Mark. Slot parlor, resort-style casino, table games. Can you just sort those out for us, what the differences are there?
Sure. A slot parlor, and we have one allowed under our legislation, is a place with only slot machines, which is the one-armed bandit, although they have buttons now. I mean, some of them still have the arm, but most of them just played with buttons, and they're really sophisticated now. It's not just wheels turning that line up on the pay line. You get three strawberries, you win. These are sophisticated. They're almost like video games with sophisticated animation, and our slot parlor is allowed to have up to 1,250 of these, but no table games. Now, a table game would be more like traditional games that you would expect from seeing Las Vegas movies like craps and blackjack and roulette. Those would be table games. Those are permitted at what we call down here in our legislation the resort-style casinos, larger places more like reminiscent of Foxwoods and Mohegan Sun, maybe not quite that large. I mean, the minimum investment in our legislation for one of these resort-style casinos is $500 million. So if you win that license, you've got to be committed to spending at least that much developing the facility. Foxwoods, by comparison, is $3 billion.
Oh, wow.
$3 billion in investment in the ground at Foxwoods. So you can see somewhat the scale would be Foxwoods-ish, but certainly not quite that big.
So what people sometimes call a destination casino, where you see a show and gamble as well.
There would be restaurants, spa, you know, the MGM facility in Springfield is added a bowling alley, a cinema, like one of those cinemas where you can pay a really lot of money to go to the movies and someone will bring you a hamburger at your seat. In addition, like spas and restaurants and hotels, obviously. The slot parlor would not have a hotel. Not that it can't, but it doesn't have to. And it's under our legislation, while the destination casinos will have hotels.
A couple more questions for you, Mark. And you described how the timing of this was, you know, when Massachusetts was struggling to emerge from recession. But now, here we are, 2014, we hear that the Massachusetts economy is doing very well. In fact, I think you guys are leading New England. So how is this economic argument being reframed in light of Massachusetts' relative economic health right now?
I think this is one of the main arguments of casino opponents, is that we just don't need this anymore, that this may have been defendable when unemployment was 9%, but it's perhaps not defendable now. I think that is something that they've been selling hard and are going to continue to sell to the voters in their campaign.
The number here in the exchange for you to join our conversation is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. We're talking this hour with Mark Arsenault. He's a Boston Globe reporter who's been covering casino gambling issues in the Bay State. We've been looking at this referendum that Massachusetts voters will be voting on in November, whether or not to go along with this law allowing three new casinos in Massachusetts. Join us with your questions and comments about what's happening there and how it might affect New Hampshire. Join us 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. And Mark, here's an email that came in from Ken in Hancock. He says, proponents of casinos sometimes frame the gambling issue in terms of personal freedom, and the opposition is being driven by personal morality. Ken says, in fact, for most of us, our opposition is based on pure common sense and the experience of other states like Delaware, which has had to bail out the casinos. Ken says, we are smart enough to know there is no such thing as a free lunch, and the only real winners in casinos are the big gambling interests. That's another narrative that we're hearing more and more lately, right, Mark? That casinos in the Northeast, some of them are struggling. So I wonder how that's being talked about in Massachusetts.
That is another issue that the opponents have been quick to grab onto. I mean, four casinos have been closed in a year in Atlantic City, or will close. Atlantic City, which was a $5 billion gambling market just 2006, is now under a $3 billion gambling market as competition has expanded all around the Northeast. Foxwoods and Mohegan Sun certainly do not make the gambling revenue that they used to. And in fact, when we say gambling revenue, we should explain the industry likes to call it gaming revenue. We don't use the euphemism. We call it gambling revenue. It is the money customers leave behind at the machines and the tables. So when I say gambling revenue, that's the money customers lose after, you know, any winnings are paid, the money left behind by customers. But those numbers are going down consistently all over the Northeast.
Well, and that's an issue that I'm going to be talking about in a few minutes with we were going to have on the line someone from this Repeal the Casino Deal campaign. And we'll also be talking to the president of MGM Springfield. So we'll definitely be talking about them with that. But another question for you, Mark. The law included lots of local control. Towns could say whether they wanted these casinos or not. How important was that in terms of getting this thing through the legislature? This idea of, you know, if you don't want it in your town, you can say no.
I don't think it would have passed without that. I think that was one of the critical factors in getting the law passed. And what that meant was there's really two levels of local control that are really close to absolute. One is with the board of selectmen in a town or the mayor in a city. If that board or if that mayor does not want a casino, then process just ends right there, because all they have to do is refuse to negotiate an agreement with that casino company, and the casino company really has no alternative but to move on and find another town. So that happened in numerous places. Foxborough, for example, decided that it didn't want to negotiate with Steve Wynn. Steve Wynn had to move on. At the next level, once the town fathers have agreed to a deal with the casino company to, you know, in terms of mitigation payments and how much tax money they would pay and what roads they would fix, that sort of thing, the next step would be a local referendum where you got to win at least 50%. You have to be endorsed by the voters where you in the town in which you want to build. And these casino companies have essentially unlimited budgets for campaigns, and some of them spend $1 million, $2 million on campaigns to win local referendums in towns of just you know, a few thousand people. And not all of them could. It started with West Springfield defeating a Hard Rock casino proposal out in western Massachusetts. A little bit surprising. Then the big shocker was East Boston defeating Caesars casino proposal at Suffolk Downs shortly after Caesars was booted off of that ticket because of other problems. But that has been the critical factor in that voters have been able to determine where these things have been able to go, and they've said no frequently despite the amount of money casino companies have put into these campaigns.
All right. Well, coming up, we'll talk with the head of the group Repeal the Casino Deal. Also a little bit later, the president of MGM Springfield. All that plus your calls, so stay with us.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio, 919. Good morning. NHPR.org is your source for New Hampshire news. Click over right now to read The Sidebar, our news blog, which takes a deeper dive into the stories behind the headlines. Keep informed about New Hampshire news all day at NHPR.org. Support for NHPR comes from you, our listeners, and support also comes to us from Franklin Pierce University, a leader in adult education, offering RN to BS and RN to MSN in nursing leadership for nursing education degrees, franklinpierce.edu. From Vineyard Brands, importers of La Via Femme wines, from Famille Perrin of the Southern Rhone Valley, available in New Hampshire State liquor stores, on the web at road.net. And the MBA program at UNH for working professionals accepting applications for fall in Durham, Manchester, or online. Information sessions in Manchester or online, mba.unh.edu. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, what's in the cards for gambling in Massachusetts and what the results from an anti-gambling referendum there might mean for New Hampshire. Give us a call. We'd love your questions, comments, and thoughts. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Post a comment on our Facebook page. Find us on Twitter. Our guest for the hour is Mark Arsenault. He's been covering this issue closely for the Boston Globe. And joining us now on the phone is John Ribeiro. He's chair of the Repeal the Casino Deal campaign, a citizen-led movement to repeal the state casino law. He lives in Winthrop, Massachusetts. John Ribeiro, great to have you. Thanks for your time.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So, John, why the backlash against this law after it was signed? There was lots of debate leading up to it. Opponents had plenty of time to make their case. So why after the fact?
Well, you know, we've been working on opposing casino gambling in Massachusetts, some of us for decades. Myself, I've only been doing this for 4 years, which was a year before the law was passed. And, you know, this wasn't an act of the people. When the speakership changed in Massachusetts, almost 100 votes changed overnight. So vote from legislators that had formally opposed casino gambling and went in support of it with the will of the speakership. And the governor and the Senate president came up with a backroom deal and passed this. And since it was passed, we've been working to overturn it.
Wow. So you're saying this was absolutely in no way, shape, or form the will of the people, or at least most people.
That's correct. It was there was no public outcry to bring casinos to Massachusetts. There was the special interest groups and union leaderships and the politicians on Beacon Hill that brought this to Massachusetts. And this is the first time that we're going to have the opportunity to vote on it come November.
The original law, John, includes, as you know, a lot of local control. And our guest, Mark Arsenault, was telling us before that a lot of towns have said no thank you to these casino deals. Why isn't that good enough? Why do you need a repeal statewide if town by town you've got plenty of opportunity to reject it?
Well, the idea that all the positive impacts are going to happen region-wide and everyone's going to be everything's going to be wonderful in an entire region, but all the negative impacts are going to be relegated to an arbitrary city or town line is just ridiculous. I mean, I heard Mark talking about the East Boston vote. East Boston rejected the casino, but there's still a casino planned for 100 feet away from the town line, the city line, and that whole vote was ignored. So we're just looking for the opportunity to allow everyone in that's going to be impacted by casinos, which really is everyone in the state when you look at where the three proposed regions are, to have an opportunity to say whether they want to have casinos or not. And it is going to impact the overall state budget eventually, and we should have this open and honest debate, which wasn't held before the casino law was passed.
What do you say, John, to a Springfield, which is struggling economically? I think there was a tornado there, you know, a couple years back. They're still trying to rebuild from that. And they're saying, hey, this is a great economic opportunity for us. What do you say to those folks?
Well, you know, casinos haven't saved a single city or town in the country. We don't need to look any further than Detroit or Atlantic City to see what casinos do to those places. You know, Atlantic City is looking to be more like Massachusetts and New Hampshire and bring in education, hospitals, and high tech as their casinos are closing. And, you know, casinos don't bring an infusion or an investment of money. What they're looking to do is take money out of the economy that's already there. So the idea that, you know, all these upfront investments are going to turn into long-term gains is just not true, and the numbers are bearing that out. And you're seeing that happen all around the East Coast, especially where there's been a saturation of the market. You know, New York is considering, just passed a law that would allow them to add 7 more casinos. So there isn't going to be anybody coming to these areas to gamble. These people are already here. They're already spending money in the economy, and what the casinos will be doing is taking it out of the economy.
So we have this referendum, both sides gearing up, as Mark told us, and November's not that far away, November 4th. Obviously,
that's
the
right.
Casino groups will have a lot more money than your side. What's your strategy,
sure,
John, given that you know you'll be outspent? I mean, that's just a fact.
Right. Yeah, we're not worried about that. We've shown, and Mark listed some of the communities that have rejected casinos in Massachusetts. In some cases, we were outspent as much as 100-1. So, you know, we don't need to match them dollar for dollar. What we know to be true is that the more that people learn about casinos, the more that people understand what their business model is, the less likely they are to want them to have them nearby. Even the commissioner of the Mass Gaming Commission has said that he doesn't want a casino near him, nor does the governor, the Speaker of the House, or the Senate president. But they want them in our community. So
they don't want them near their own houses.
Exactly. They don't want them in their own towns, but they want them for the state to bring some revenue to the state directly.
You know, if I could ask you a personal question, John, you said you just got involved in this 4 years ago. From what I've heard, you know, you're not a lobbyist, you're not a politician, you're not a sort of activist, you're just a regular guy. And then here you are, chair of this Repeal the Casino Deal campaign, which, you know, in a stunning upset, got the state Supreme Court to say, yes, we can put this on the ballot, overruling your own state's attorney general. What's this been like for you?
Well, you know, just raised my head up one day and realized that this was about to happen to my community. I live in Winthrop, but I grew up in East Boston, so I haven't really gone very far. They're right next door to one another. And just realized that I needed to teach my children, do what I teach my children, that is to stand up when you see something wrong happening. and I have, and it's not over yet. Hopefully it'll be over on November 4th. But that's where it comes from, just the desire to protect my community and not put it on somebody else's backyard if I don't want it in my own.
Well, John, thank you for being with us. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. Anytime.
That's John Ribeiro, again, chair of the Repeal the Casino Deal campaign, a citizen-led movement to repeal the state's casino law. He lives in Winthrop. The number for you to join us here in the exchange as we look at what's happening with casinos and this referendum in Massachusetts is 1-800-892-6477. We're finding out what's going on there, how it might affect the debate here in New Hampshire. Join us, 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. Very quickly to you, Mark Arsenault, I was interested to hear John talk about the politics of this, that there was this speakership change in the Massachusetts legislature, and all of a sudden 100 votes changed. Wow.
True. It was a change in speakership to Speaker DeLeo, who has just been much more friendly to the industry. One thing I noticed very interesting about John's remarks, you noticed that there was no moral opposition to gambling contained in that argument. And I think everything you talked about was economics, and which I think shows that the battle this fall is going to be fought on a field exclusively talking about the economics of the industry.
All right. Well, joining us now on the phone is another voice that's been very active in this Bay State gambling debate. Michael Mathis is with us, president of MGM Springfield, which recently won approval to operate a resort casino in Springfield. And Michael Mathis, good to have you. Thanks for your time.
Thank you. Good morning.
Well, let's talk about the economics. And we've read a lot lately, Michael, about the saturation of casinos in the Northeast, casinos closing elsewhere. Why is this the right time to be building in Massachusetts?
It's the right time for Massachusetts, and really I speak more about the Springfield opportunity than all the other operators that are bidding for their particular opportunities. But you know, for Springfield, Western Massachusetts is at the crossroads of 91 and 291, obviously. So we have the opportunity to dip down into Connecticut, and we're projecting that we'll pull a third of our customers and our revenue up north from Connecticut, and do what the legislation wanted to be done, which was to repatriate dollars that had been going across state lines for quite some time.
I was just going to say, so pulling some of those Massachusetts license plates that you see at Foxwoods back into Massachusetts.
That's exactly right. That's a big part of our model. We're gonna be targeting the Hartford, West Hartford market, and as well as upstate New York and you know, communities to the north as well, so that we can bring new tourism, new visitors into Western Mass.
Two Wall Street ratings agencies have recently urged caution with the gambling industry. Moody's lowered its outlook for the industry to negative. We've been looking at this in New Hampshire as well. So what does that say about the prospects for gambling, again, to be successful in Massachusetts, given the nervousness about the industry in the Northeast?
I think what you'll observe about the gaming industry is that it moves in cycles. Ironically, Las Vegas has posted one of its strongest quarters in quite some time. We in Detroit, MGM Grand Detroit, posted one of our strongest quarters in quite some time. And at the same time, our China business has stalled a little bit temporarily, we think. But that's the exact opposite of what it's been the last 5 years or so, where Asia was booming and the domestic markets were hurting. So it's cyclical, and I think what you'll see now is a little bit of a ramp up in terms of supply, and at the same time there's jurisdictions that are starting to normalize and equalize, you know, some of the bad performers from the good performers. So I really don't think you can look at a single snapshot and understand what this market will look like, for example, in 2.5 years when we open.
So saturation in one place doesn't necessarily spell bad news for you guys in Massachusetts?
No, it doesn't. It'll spell bad news for, you know, the surrounding states when we repatriate these dollars. That's, you know, you look at the press in Connecticut and Rhode Island, and you know, they rejoice, frankly, at this repeal effort, and are probably, you know, some of the biggest supporters of John and his effort, because they would love to see this go away and for them to keep their tax dollars and their jobs. But you know, we're obviously going to fight very hard to keep this opportunity for Springfield.
Well, just two last questions for you, Michael, and again, I appreciate your time. If this referendum passes, What does that mean for you? You've invested a lot already.
Well, we have a number of opportunities around the world. We have a very strong business in Asia. We own half the Las Vegas Strip, and we'll continue to pursue opportunities. At the end of the day, we only want to be where we're welcome. So the one positive impact, although it will be a delay to the opening of this resort, the one positive takeaway from this vote is that there won't be any question at the end of the day, come November 4th, that the state and the residents support keeping introducing this industry here, since they're already customers and have been sending their business across state lines. So at least we'll get some closure on that issue.
Sure, you'll know for sure. Well, and we heard from John Ribeiro again making the economic argument. You know, the future for Massachusetts is in healthcare, is in high tech, is in education, is not in gambling. He talked about the saturation, which a lot of people are looking at. But what's the message you're going to be getting out there, Michael, for Springfield, for Massachusetts, as this referendum heats up heading into November?
Yeah, I think the most important thing for us is to really make sure that the residents of Massachusetts understand our business. I think a lot of the comments you hear from the opposition folks are really old talking points from an old playbook. You know, bad jobs, crime. The truth is, our business has evolved. MGM is one of the leaders in that business, and in Springfield alone, we'll have 400 different job classifications with both blue collar and white collar jobs. We're going to employ accountants, event planners, engineers, lawyers, database managers. You know, people with high school degrees, people with postgraduate degrees, and yes, people that it'll be their first job. Hopefully in the beginning of a career, and that's what a town like Springfield desperately needs. So this is about economic development. It just happens to have a casino attached to it.
Okay. Michael, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
That's Michael Mathis, again, president of MGM Springfield, which recently won approval to operate a resort casino in Springfield. Back to you, if I could, Mark Arsenault, very quickly. So here we had John Ribeiro and Michael Mathis both making the economic argument. I wonder which one's going to hold sway with Massachusetts voters. It's too early to tell, I know, but it's real interesting.
It is, and I was struck by Michael Mathis' comments, which he prefaced specifically to say that he wanted to talk about Springfield in Western Massachusetts, which is interesting because that is a place in the state, Springfield especially, where the economy has not rebounded as it has in Boston, where if you drive around, you're just driving under construction cranes wherever you go. So I think that was very interesting that he is targeting those comments to a place that has not recovered.
Well, and it's interesting, too, you know, you hear some towns really want it, some towns absolutely not. What are some of the political splits that you see in Massachusetts, Mark, over this? Is it sort of, you know, liberal elites versus blue collar who want the jobs, or
no,
what?
No, it's where the jobs message has resonated. That's where these things have passed. I mean, essentially, you can almost draw a line at the median family income, going town to town, states where the median income is below the state, cities where the median income is below the state average have embraced the industry, and where it's above have generally rejected the industry.
Wow, interesting. So wealthier towns say no thanks, and less wealthy towns say yes, please, come on in.
The suburbs have been an absolute graveyard for the dreams of the casino developers. But places where they have passed, look at Springfield, Everett, Revere. These are small cities, small-ish cities compared to Boston anyway, where the economy has not really rebounded and they're desperately in need of jobs.
All right, let's go back to our listeners. And Steve is calling from Concord. Hi, Steve. You're on The Exchange. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm involved in the spokesman for Casino Free New Hampshire. This has been a great discussion, and I think it's very educational for citizens in New Hampshire, because I'm sure in the next legislative session there'll be another discussion here about whether we should have casinos. What I found interesting about this discussion is that I think Massachusetts rethinking this shows that expanded gambling really isn't the easy money that it seems to be at first. And I think we're seeing all the news in the Wall Street Journal and everywhere else that the revenues seem to be declining in New England and throughout the Northeast with gambling, because there seems to be a saturation of it. So this last session, the governor kept advocating that we needed a casino because we were going to lose revenue to Massachusetts. If the referendum banning casinos passes, I'll bet the new argument will be, well, now it's a great opportunity to get people from Massachusetts to come to New Hampshire and gamble.
Right, and what's wrong with that argument, Steve?
Well, you know, the fact is it's bad economics, as every other state's seen. I mean, you see the legislatures in New Jersey and Delaware having to bail out the casinos. And once, you know, I like to say that gambling is, casino gambling is a crack cocaine of legislative funding because it's highly addictive, it's erratic, and once you're hooked, it's very, very hard for these legislatures to let that go, so they do givebacks and concessions, and you see that all up and down the Northeast.
And Steve, real quick, because we're heading into a break, I did want to ask you very quickly. We heard Michael Mathis, the president of MGM Springfield, talk about repatriating those dollars. You know, he says, look, I go down to Foxwoods, I go down to Mohegan Sun, I see thousands of Massachusetts license plates. Maggie Hassan has made the same case. There's a lot of New Hampshire people gambling at those places, so why not have them spend those dollars in the Granite State?
Ever since World War II, New Hampshire has spent millions of dollars, including about $4 million a year, promoting New Hampshire as a family-friendly place where you come to camp, where you come to hike, where you come to enjoy our lakes. Casino gambling, we heard MGM or Millennium Gambling representatives say they'd spend $30 to $40 million advertising gambling in New Hampshire. It would destroy our brand, and we think it would just be, for the most part, a reallocation around the state of discretionary dollars to a casino. You know, so money, people wouldn't go to the Capital Center for the Arts. Instead, they'd go to the casino. It really doesn't create the kind of investment and kind of jobs that one of your guests pointed out that really grow an economy. And it's just bad policy. It's
okay.
Contrary to all of our marketing and tourism efforts.
Steve, thank you very much for calling in. Real quickly, Mark, this cannibalization issue has come up a lot in New Hampshire. People worried that visitors will go to the big theater at the casino instead of to the local theaters. Does that come up in Massachusetts, Mark?
Sure. And in fact, the legislature tried to head off that issue when they were drafting the bill by requiring the casino companies to have deals with local theaters. So maybe the Wynn Project, for example, would have a deal with the TD Garden that they could, you know, the casino would sponsor shows there, so that they're thinking that those partnerships could have customers going at least two ways. If you go to the casino, maybe you also would go to one of the larger or smaller theaters.
A little cross-promotion there to ease those fears.
Correct.
All right,
yes.
More of your comments and questions after a break. We'll also hear from Kevin Landrigan with the Telegraph of Nashua on how New Hampshire's casino debate is affected by what's happening in the Bay State. All that coming up. Stay with us.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio, 939. Good morning.
On the next Ian Rehm Show, debate over President Obama's use of executive orders. Then for this month's environmental outlook, the health and future of our coral reefs. All coming up on the Ian Rehm Show.
This morning from 10 till noon on NHPR. Support for NHPR comes from you, our listeners. Sam from Geriatric Psychiatry Services at Frisbee Memorial Hospital in Rochester, specializing in mental and behavioral health for people 65 and older in outpatient or inpatient settings, frisbeehospital.com. And Doucette Survey, serving your professional land surveying and mapping needs in New England, now with offices in New Hampshire and Maine. Information at doucetsurvey.com. It's 9:40. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on The Exchange, what's in store for the Common Core, these new school standards, as a new school year begins later this month? That's tomorrow on The Exchange. Today, Massachusetts' upcoming referendum in November on whether to repeal a casino law. We're looking at that, what's been happening in the Bay State, and what this might mean for New Hampshire. You can join us with your thoughts. Call in 1-800-892-6477. Find us on Twitter or Facebook to continue the conversation there. You can send us an email as well, exchange@nhpr.org. Our guest for the hour is Mark Arsenault, Boston Globe reporter who's been covering this. And we've heard from a pro-casino voice in Massachusetts. We've heard from the chair of the Repeal the Casino Deal campaign. We go now to our own Kevin Landrigan, political reporter at the Telegraph of Nashua, who has been watching this Massachusetts debate and what it might mean for us. Kevin, thanks a lot for your time. We appreciate it.
Great to be back with you, Laura.
So how are gambling supporters, Kevin, in New Hampshire viewing this referendum in Massachusetts in terms of what it means for them?
Well, certainly the stakes for this referendum are very high in New Hampshire, but the results of what happens, whether it's repealed or it's not, really remain unknown. As your folks have talked about earlier, the bill nearly passed, went forward in the House of Representatives last spring. It's important to remember, by one vote, they decided to kill the bill.
Unprecedented in New Hampshire to be that
but they
close.
But they didn't decide to pass the bill. It was only they only had to get through that step, and then you would have had to decide, okay, what kind of gambling bill can we support? There were 14 amendments on the table that would have all been discussed. I guess my simple point about the future really is this. If the repeal is passed, then you're going to see a flood of these developers, the Steve Wynns, the MGMs, the Mohegan Sons, all look at New Hampshire and all try and make perhaps aggressive proposals to site casinos here. That would seem to increase the likelihood of it passing in the legislature. Not necessarily. Why? Because a lot of those casinos plans, as we've seen in Massachusetts, are much bigger. They're much larger destination resorts, more hotels, more amenities. Translation, more basic cannibalizing of the existing retail businesses here. And we saw this year, the New Hampshire Retail and Hospitality Association came out against the casino bill. That had a lot to do with stopping Governor Hassan being able to get it passed through the House. If the repeal doesn't pass, then certainly there'll be this, the assumption might be, well, three casinos are going to go forward and a slot barn in Massachusetts. There's no hope for a casino. Well, as a matter of fact, there'll be even more urgency for the legislature to do something. As Governor Hassan has pointed out, $75 million a year is expected to be lost, according to studies, if there is a casino in Greater Boston. So she'll have that argument to make. So it's which obviously is an economic and a jobs argument as well.
So she's been making that argument all along, right, Kevin, that, look, Massachusetts is moving forward. If we don't move forward, you know, we'll really be losing those dollars in an even bigger way than we already are.
That's right. She has. And as we've talked about in other programs, the next governor is already facing a tight budget now and an even tighter budget going forward. There's going to be a need for additional revenue or significant spending cuts. As you know, we've got the settlement with the hospitals over Medicaid enhancement tax. That's $50 million a year. We've got the mental health care settlement out of court. That's about $30 million a year once that ramps up. So she's not only got the argument that we're going to lose revenue, it's in the backdrop of a budget that may well need additional revenue to balance.
And that was an argument, right, Kevin, correct me if I'm wrong, that held sway with Senate Democrats last time around. They said, you know, I don't necessarily love casinos, but I really want to fund mental health or child services.
That's right. And certainly we're seeing in this campaign for governor, on the other side, the Republican candidates for governor are talking about cutting business taxes to spur the economy, to get our economic growth, frankly, up to the level of Massachusetts right now.
You're waiting, as I understand, Kevin, for an event with Walt Havenstein, one of the Republican candidates for governor. What is Mr. Havenstein and Andrew Hemingway, the other Republican candidate for governor here in New Hampshire, what are they saying about casinos or not? Maggie Hassan's made her support clear.
She has. Walt Havenstein isn't quite agnostic on the subject, but essentially has said, I haven't been proven that this is a good idea, and I don't think we need it. Andrew Hemingway has taken a more strong opposition to casino gambling, but he has his own proposal to actually allow a limited number of restaurants, bars in the state to have slot machines, essentially places that now have so-called gray machine gambling or video poker machines in them, but they don't pay cash right now. Those folks could try to get licenses to have a limited number of slot machines there. He feels that would retain New Hampshire's brand, there wouldn't be any big casino, and they would mix well with the existing retail establishments in those communities.
Well, Kevin, I know you're on the beat, you're on the campaign trail there, so I will let you go. Thank you very much for being with us. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Laura.
Kevin Landrigan, political reporter at the Telegraph of Nashua, filling us in on how New Hampshire politicians are talking about Massachusetts' referendum on casino gambling. I want to go back to our listeners, Mark Arsenault, but quick thoughts for you there, hearing about how your big debate is affecting our big debate.
Well, I think he's very right when he says that. It's a very compelling and powerful argument for politicians, the idea of money in the pockets of your taxpayers going across and ending up in the coffers of another state. I mean, the first time a live free or die license plate is spotted in the parking lot of a Massachusetts casino, I would expect that New Hampshire would be in a lot of pressure for New Hampshire to follow suit.
Well, and it was interesting. He said if Massachusetts does repeal, the industry might very well look north. And some of the names that have come up this hour, you know, MGM and Steve Wynn and so forth, might say, okay, Massachusetts, forget you. We're heading across the border to New Hampshire.
Well, you would still, if you were in southern New Hampshire, in certain places, you can still tap into the Boston market, at least the outskirts of it. So he's probably right.
All right, let's go back to our listeners. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Email us, exchange@nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. And back to the phones, Mark. Let's go to Scott. He's also calling from Concord. Hi, Scott. You're on the Exchange. Welcome.
Hey, Laura. How are you?
Fine.
Hey, this is Scott Spradling representing Millennium Gaming, and I just wanted to say thank you for having this conversation. It's a great topic, and kudos to both Mark and Kevin for offering a lot of benchmark points for people to be watching with this debate. I just had two quick points. One was to try to just correct a misstatement by Steve Dupree when he said that Millennium has promised to do $40 million in advertising to overwhelm the tourism and family-friendly image of New Hampshire. First of all, we've never said that, so that's just not true. But I also think to a greater extent with that debate about attracting visitors, a tourism economy, protecting our brand, I think people are sophisticated. And I think we can walk and chew gum at the same time when it comes to advertising different interests for different people. And we have said all along we would gladly work with the state to help market New Hampshire as a destination for a variety of different reasons, not just the outdoor, but the year-round attractions like a casino. So well, I think we can work together.
Yeah, and Scott, I'm glad you called in. As you know, the New Hampshire Restaurant and Lodging Association was pretty upset with some of the proposals, feeling like their businesses would be cannibalized by a big casino. So how does that play into what you're saying about the tourism attraction?
Sure. I think it's twofold. Number one, if you look at the different states around the country, and let's remember, there are dozens of states that have some form of casino gambling. I think you can see there are plenty of examples where a casino can work well in a community with partners and these different restaurants so that the rising tide of more visitors and more dollars to an area can raise all the boats and that people can all benefit from it. The other aspect to this, too, Laura, is that competition is not a bad thing. The competition is the reason why we're seeing the numbers shift around. You heard Steve talk about New Jersey and Delaware getting bailouts, but you didn't hear him talk about Maine, where the two casinos are doing very well, are ahead of revenues, and even in the New England region, things are moving ahead. Someone just mentioned a moment ago, there are 7 new casinos being built in New York. That's not because there's a lack of demand regionally. The demand is on the rise. It's what people want to do. So competition's a good thing among casinos. That's why some of the older ones are in trouble, but you can work with the Restaurant and Lodging Association, and without getting into too many details, you can see that happening around the country. It can work.
Well, and I'm glad you called in again, Scott. One last question for you, if I could, since you did call in. If Massachusetts does pass this repeal and says no thank you to casinos, what do you think that means to New Hampshire?
Well, I think that New Hampshire has an opportunity no matter what the decision is made. I think Mark nailed it. No matter what, you have a huge number of people in New Hampshire right now that are going gambling elsewhere. And I think the governor is right. I agree with her. I think you can recapture some of that money. But just as importantly, depending on where and what type of a casino you build in New Hampshire, you can still attract dollars from outside of the state and bring in fresh dollars to New Hampshire. I'm obviously representing Salem, so a border community like Salem could benefit greatly. We've predicted that upwards of 60% of visitors to a Salem casino would come from Massachusetts and surrounding states. It would be new dollars coming to the state, which we know is something lawmakers perk up to.
Okay. Well, Scott, thank you for calling in. We appreciate it.
Thanks for the time, Laura.
Take care. Mark, back to you, if I could, before we go to our listeners again. A little bit more on the referendum in Massachusetts, how it's affecting your politics. What about Governor Deval Patrick? He's not running for re-election, as you told us, but he did sign this law. What's he saying? What's he doing?
It's funny, the governor, he signed the law, but then after that essentially washed his hands of it, saying that the five-member commission that the law creates to implement the law was in charge of doing that, and he didn't want to be seen as if he was meddling in that. He has not had a lot to say about the casino industry afterwards, except for 2 points. One, that he supports the law and thinks that it's been implemented well. And number two, he did say that he would not want, or he would not vote for a casino out in the small Berkshire Mountain town where he owns a second home.
So kind of what John Ribeiro said earlier, he doesn't want one in his own town. Some of the leading politicians have said that.
And, of course, the counter spin to that would be, well, that's why we have all this local control, so communities can decide on their own.
Sure. And what about the race to replace Governor Patrick? Martha Coakley is a candidate, isn't she? And she kind of got wrapped up in this.
She did when middle of last year when her office, she's the sitting attorney general, when her office said that John Ribeiro's casino repeal measure was unconstitutional because it would break implied contracts the state had with these casino license applicants. John and his crew had to go to court to get that opinion overturned. They did. The state Supreme Court overturned that, and that was not a great day for the Coakley campaign. I think she's bounced back from that. She is, I believe she's going to, has said that she would vote to maintain the law. Don Berwick was one of her Democratic opponents, is the one who's trying to make the most hay as an anti-casino opponent.
Okay, let's go back to our listeners, Mark. And Jake is calling from Candia. Hi, Jake. Go ahead. You're on The Exchange. Welcome.
Hi, Laura. Thanks for having me.
Sure.
Just want to take issue with your last caller talked about how well casinos work with local businesses, and I remember reading two books about how Foxwoods was started, and they talked about the impact that Foxwoods had on the neighboring areas, and specifically restaurants. I remember there were like 30 restaurants within a few miles before Foxwoods. Within 2 years, there were four. So I think it's not quite accurate to say that, you know, that casinos are going to work so well with local businesses. They open up gas stations on the casino property. They can put just about anybody out of business because they have so much money. So I think your listeners would do well to do a little research and maybe read about what happened after Foxwoods opened.
Yeah, Jake, thank you for calling in. The cannibalization issue is huge. And we talked about that earlier, Mark, but any quick thoughts from you on that? And then I have another question for you.
I would say opponents of that is one of the reasons, or one of the issues on their, I would say, top three hit list would be along with lower wage scale jobs. Cannibalization has got to be one of their top three issues, yeah.
You know, it's interesting, Mark, this whole hour, Connecticut keeps coming up, the tribal casinos there and so forth. And the idea that I think one of our guests said, I think it was from MGM, he said he wanted to repatriate those dollars back to Massachusetts. That's an argument we've heard here in New Hampshire, certainly. People want to bring the dollars to New Hampshire. How does the Connecticut experience, the Connecticut narrative, play out in this Massachusetts debate? It's got to be having an impact.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was Connecticut and really Twin River and Rhode Island as well that I think allowed this bill in Massachusetts to get passed in the first place. Without those casinos, it would be hard to imagine Massachusetts would have gone down this road. It has continued to be one of you heard Mike Mathis from MGM. This is one of his big selling points. Keep that money home and tax it. So it's going to Connecticut and it's building. You know, it's going Connecticut through the tribal casinos, and it's paying for schools and bridges in Connecticut. Why not keep that tax money home and pay for schools and bridges here? It's a huge issue, and one of two issues that the casino companies are going to be using just to hammer this point home over the next couple of months, which is going to be jobs and repatriating those dollars. Those are their two big issues.
What about the tribes in Massachusetts? Is there any talk of them going ahead? Because they operate under separate rules, right,
sure,
from the big companies like MGM.
Yeah, and I could bore the listeners in New Hampshire for hours.
You won't bore us.
the tribal gambling politics here. There are two federally recognized tribes in Massachusetts. The Mashpee Wampanoag in southeastern Mass have a proposal to build a casino in Taunton, which is about maybe 35 minutes south of Boston. They do not need a state license. Federally recognized tribes do not need a state license to host gambling on sovereign land. The problem for the Mashpee, they don't have any sovereign tribal land. They can buy land like you or me or anyone else, but it's not. It has to be converted through the federal government on paper to sovereign land. That hasn't happened to them. There's a very complicated court case that makes it difficult for that to happen, and whether they can ever overcome these obstacles and open their casino in Taunton is unknown. But it's something that you can never say won't happen. So they remain out there as the potential fourth casino someday if they ever get these legal issues cleared up. So that is really chilled interest from the commercial casino companies in southeastern Massachusetts. Out on Martha's Vineyard, our other federally recognized tribe, the Aquinnah Wampanoag, they have land in, it's called land in trust. They have sovereign tribal land. However, they have, there's another agreement between the state and the tribe that goes back to the 80s that suggests that maybe they don't have rights to build a casino on that land. That is also being tested in court. The governor has sued the Aquinnah to try to clear this up. That's in federal court, and that's going to take a little while to sort out.
Wow, Mark Arsenault, you got your hands full there.
Yes, we do.
Thank you so much for giving us an hour of your time this morning. We really appreciate it.
You'll get my bill. I appreciate it.
That's Mark Arsenault, Boston Globe reporter covering casino and gambling issues in Massachusetts. The Exchange is a production of NHPR. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Senior producer, Ellen Grimm. Our producer is Faith Meixel. Our interns are James Pouliot and Renee Taylor. And I'm Laura Canoy.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed any part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org.
I'm Laura Canoy, and tomorrow on The Exchange, what's in store for Common Core? These new education standards have already been met with enthusiasm, confusion, and also protest. Some states are now moving away from Common Core. Others are moving ahead. We'll get an update on this issue, including in New Hampshire, where several districts may take their own approach. Send us your thoughts by email or Facebook, and join us for The Exchange tomorrow morning live at 9 and again at 8 p.m. on NHPR.
Ian Ream Show next at 10 o'clock on New Hampshire Public Radio, where support comes from your listeners and from Murray & Walker, offering technology solutions and network management for businesses. Information on the web at murrayandwalker.com. And the New London Barn Playhouse, a professional summer theater presenting Cole Porter's classic musical, Kiss Me, Kate, August 6th to the 17th. Information and tickets at nlbarn.org.
These are the stations of New Hampshire Public Radio.
WEVO Concord, 89.1.
WEVS Nashua, 88.3.
WEVH Hanover, 91.3.
WEVN Keene, 90.7.
WEVC Gorham, 107.1.
WEVJ Jackson, 99.5.
WEVF Colebrook, 90.3.
And WEVQ Littleton, 91.9.
And online at nhpr.org.
From WAMU and NPR in Washington, I'm Diane Rehm. American presidents have been issuing executive orders since the founding of the country. Abraham Lincoln issued an order to prevent a constitutional crisis. Years later, President Truman used executive orders to integrate the armed forces and seize control of the nation's steel mills. President George W. Bush issued 291. So far, President Obama has issued 184 executive orders. Supporters argue these are necessary in the face of a gridlocked Congress. Critics say issuing too many executive orders violate separation of powers in the Constitution. Debate over executive orders. First This News.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Korva Coleman. A ceasefire between Israel and the Palestinian militant group Hamas appears to be holding. Both sides agreed to a 3-day ceasefire and to begin talks in Egypt to reach a more lasting truce. Daniel Estrin reports from Jerusalem.
Hamas wants Israel and Egypt to lift their blockade of Gaza so Palestinians can trade freely and move in and out more easily. Yossi Cooperwasser, director general of the Israeli Strategic Affairs Ministry, says Israel is willing to ease restrictions and allow the international community to help rebuild what was destroyed in the fighting, but only with assurances that Israel will be secure.
Arrangements that assure us that this ceasefire is going to be different than previous ones. It's going to last for a long time and that Hamas is not going to rearm itself.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu congratulated Israeli soldiers for completing the destruction of tunnels on the Gaza border today, intended to prevent militants from carrying out attacks in Israel. He called it a, quote, impressive achievement, a congratulatory message signaling that Israel aims for this to be the end of its near-month-long military operation. For NPR News, I'm Daniel Estrin in Jerusalem.
A second American missionary relief worker infected with Ebola is en route to the U.S., NPR's Ophabia Quist Arkton reports her transfer comes as the World Bank pledges $200 million in emergency help to fight Ebola as fears increase in West Africa.
Health authorities in Syria.